Hey, greetings, Internet. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and creative entrepreneurs looking to grow, not only by learning new things, but by connecting their work to big ideas and overcoming the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. Welcome to episode 157, The Future of Work, with Stephen Warley. Stephen runs Life Skills That Matter and is on a mission to share why self-employment is the future of work. In this engaging interview, we cover a lot of ground, including what entrepreneurship actually is, the importance of self-management and self-awareness, why technology is not the enemy, the fact that self-doubt and fear never go away, and the three types of work we often avoid. I absolutely loved this interview with Stephen. There was so much passion and energy expressed throughout, and I hope you enjoy it. You can find show notes and links for this episode at gwtw.co/157. All right, let's get into this interview with Stephen. Stephen, thank you so much for being on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little about what you do?
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Chris. Just before we jumped on, I think we're just going to have a super fun conversation. I just love what you do and how you think about things.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I am currently somebody who is trying to prepare people for the future of work. You know, and a lot of times people don't like to think about the future, but it's happening fast. Mm-hmm. I tell people that work is going to fundamentally change as you know it in the next decade. It's happening that quickly. Mm-hmm. I've been living this way of working for the last 17 years. I got laid off, or as I like to say, corporate America kicked me out of the system 17 years ago, election day 2000. Thank you. Biggest favor of my life. You know, I don't know if I would have ended up on this path if that moment didn't happen at that particular time in my life. So I'm sure we'll kind of get into some other twists and turns of the story, but it took me quite a while to accept working for myself. It was not immediate. It was about a 5-year process.
Oh, wow.
And I often refer to that period as that's when I was a reluctant entrepreneur. Entrepreneurship chose me. I didn't choose it. And it was because of economic necessity. I was working for a .com in New York, and I was part of the .com bust of 2000.
Oh, wow.
And it was kind of like a mini depression in the media tech world at that time. I know it's so funny that there's people working in the tech world who they've never seen downside, you know? They think like it's never going to happen. I'm like, eventually what goes up comes down. It must come down. It's just a law of nature. It'll happen. I don't want it to happen, but it's normal. So on that journey, after 3 months of trying to get a job, I finally took a freelance gig, and I'm going to date myself now. I had to produce an interactive CD-ROM.
Ooh.
Yeah, remember that? Anybody
with Flash.
There's like people Googling, what's a CD-ROM right now? And it was for a pharmaceutical company. They built some new website for doctors. I had to hire actors and everything to explain how to use this website. Like, isn't that kind of silly? I mean, not just saying that out loud. Like, people paid me for that. And the funny thing, Chris, though, is I was freaked out about like, oh my God, is this how I'm going to get clients? What do I do about taxes? How do I get paid? And it was like 2 hours from where I was living at the time. But I was getting paid more on a daily basis than I'd ever been paid before. Hmm. And those moments started to come together where I started to look at money differently, or how I was going to get work a little bit differently. But as I said, it was a process. It took me 5 years to finally embrace like, oh my gosh, I'm good at this and I'm making more money. And who wouldn't want to work for themselves? You get to control your time, do your thing, and work with people that you want to work with that inspire you all the time.
Yeah. So in that 5-year period of time that you're
stuck
owning the label entrepreneurship, what type of permission did you start to discover through that process?
Oh, I love this word permission. I don't know if you know about this, maybe, because I feel like that's one of the critical things that's broken with our work system, our mindset about work. Mm-hmm. Our entire current work system is all designed around permission. We have an entire educational system to indoctrinate you to constantly ask permission to when you work, what you work on, how you do it. You're not allowed or encouraged to think on your own, right? Follow the directions. Like that just drives me nuts that I would get points off because I didn't follow the directions, but I still arrived at the right answer. No, I mean, it's like, come on. And now that whole concept of like deferring to authority, like follow the schedule, fit in, that is declining in value and very quickly. we are now moving into an era because of automation and the rapid pace of change, decentralization of management, you know, mass market descending into a bunch of niche markets, that you have to think for yourself. And it was hard, as I now I can look back, I had to deprogram myself to give myself permission, because I was taught to work for myself. I had awesome parents, did amazing for me, you know, amazing job raising me. But they came from a blue collar background and they wanted me to go to college. I went to college. They paid for it. Thank you so much, mom and dad. I know a lot of people that they don't have that option. I was so lucky. But this idea that I was going to get a job and settle into it and be taken care of for the rest of my life if I just kept my head down and did what I was told to do. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting laid off, and I'd worked at like five different companies. It was like media in New York. That's just what you do. Yeah. People, you know, listeners of your podcast get that. You're always skipping around. My father, I remember saying, like, so when do you think you're going to settle down into a company? You know, I've been skipping around a lot the last 5 years. And my father is awesome, nicest guy you ever want to meet. And I still remember this visceral reaction to be like, this is the way it is now. You know, I felt so like this very like scared animal response to be like, are you kidding me? That was an option for you. It's not an option for me. I mean, I saw that, and it's still, it concerns me how there's still millions of Americans or people, folks in the Western world who don't see this coming, you know, and that's why I'm kind of doing what I'm doing to be like, hey, your house is on fire. You know, just want to let you know, if you want to do something about it, you can. And I'm not creating this. This is not my vision for work. This is just what's happening. And if you want to respond to it, I'd like to tell you some different ways that you can do that.
Yeah.
So I know that's helpful of how I mean, the permission part is like, eventually, I think it's just through as I became more and more familiar and comfortable with working for myself, that's when I gave myself permission to take ownership of that. And I think that is one of the key reasons where it bugs me to no end, Chris, when people say, you know what, self-employment, freelancing, working for yourself, entrepreneurship, that's just for, you know, a select group of people. You know, it's people who are just naturally born that way. And I totally disagree, because I was not naturally born that way. Hmm. I had to learn it. It can be taught. And imagine if we did have a societal mission or educational system, an ethos to say, hey, more of us are going to work for ourselves and we're going to help each other do that. I think many more people than what they've been led to believe can actually work for themselves.
Well, and it's interesting too, because as you're describing this world of working for yourself, I get two very different pictures in my mind. I think about, you know, creative freelancers and the types of people that are drawn to that. But then I kind of think about Uber drivers or Lyft drivers and this economy where, you know, people are buying cars to go drive people around and those different types of things. So, I mean, are those the same thing? Are they different?
You're so awesome. I feel like you get me. It feels so comfortable. I like when you, I feel like so invited. You know, you're thank you for asking these awesome questions, because this lights my fire, because I'm going to go to the other end of that spectrum. And I think sometimes Silicon Valley entrepreneurships have hijacked the definition of entrepreneurship. Mm. They will say, in order to label yourself as an entrepreneur, you have to go out, raise a bunch of money, get into debt, and then grow your business really, really fast and work yourself to death, and then exit. You know, I love that word, exit. Yeah. Sell your business, make a crap load of money, and then you can go live your life. Mm. And maybe you helped people in the process or didn't. And that is another kind of, to me, elitist form of control of economic opportunities, where what I see happening is there is a blurring of what working for yourself and working for somebody else is starting to occur. And there is a wide spectrum from the gig worker that you identified to the freelancer to the passive income generator who's making more money. They're not trading their minutes for dollars like a freelancer, mm-hmm. all the way up to that VC funded entrepreneur, you know, in Silicon Valley. And there's lots of other variations in between. I think you get to call yourself whatever you want, but you have to back it up. You have to show that you're committed, that you're learning, that you're improving. Because I will say, I know that it's very fashionable now to call yourself an entrepreneur. There's a lot of people who are not backing that up, and that's not okay.
So how do you back up the word of entrepreneur?
You have to be committed to something. Like, I am committed, people would say, maybe even obsessed with really educating people about what's happening to work and how you can prepare for that. You know, like, there's no question anybody who's met me in my life, you're like, yep, go talk to Stephen. He will calm you down, give you very actionable steps of like what you could start doing. And it's a process. It's, mm-hmm. You know, I'm not one of those people say, you know, you're going to make $100,000 a month in 6 months. That almost never happens. That's just, it's great marketing copy.
That's clickbait.
It's clickbait. You know, it's about 2 years. You know, it just takes time. Like, doesn't it take time for you?
Yes. I mean, it took me 12 years to get to the point where I'm at today.
It took me 5 years to get back to the income from the job that I was laid off from.
Wow.
And then after that, it went up really, really fast. And we can talk about why that happens. Remind me of what we were talking about. I went off on a tangent.
We were talking just about entrepreneurship and how do you back up that word?
So number one, having that, I think you have to have a sense of commitment. And I think a lot of times people get into entrepreneurship because they're like, ooh, this is a great way to make a lot of money really fast. That is like the absolute wrong reason to get into this, because back to our earlier point, this is a process. Mm-hmm. And money is only going to sustain your motivation for so long for the majority of people. You have to be really interested in serving a particular community, solving a particular problem, addressing a certain feeling. So that's step one. Step two is, what is the skill that you're uniquely good at that you want to keep getting better at? You want to craft, you know, in the way that in the Renaissance, they would, you know, have all these layers of apprenticeships and mastery. They were constantly getting better and better and better. You know, they never felt like their work was ever done. So, you know, you and I, like, I still want to get better and better at being a podcaster, being a better writer. I want to get better at doing video to communicate my message. So that process of, even if you're not seeing immediate financial results, that you're still committed to the process of getting better. Mm. At least those are the people I want to work with, because yeah. I feel like those are the real deal people. Like, of course, you and I want to get paid and we deserve to get paid well and fairly. But it's really about that commitment, and it's commitment to your process and the skill and the craft. Does that make sense?
It does. You made a comment when we were just kind of chatting before starting the show about self-management is the key to everything, whether you work for someone else or you work for yourself. So what do you mean by self-management?
So when people think about what's going to happen in the future of work, right? You hear so much, a lot of noise out there. You hear the technology stuff, machine learning, AI, robots are going to take over. Then you often hear about like what corporations are doing and how they're going to respond and what's going to happen with globalization versus, you know, kind of protecting our economy, you know, from outside forces. So there's all this stuff going on out there, but I've reduced it to this one thing for the individual. That's who I'm an advocate for. Like, what do you, the individual, need to start thinking about doing and practicing to prepare you for these fundamental changes? And I know we live in a society with a very short attention span, so I've reduced it down to this. You're going to have to manage more of yourself than ever before. You're going to have to get better at it. Now, that's something that wasn't necessarily required of us in the 20th century industrial economy. And that regime, corporations is kind of like, do your thing over and over again. We'll pay you well and we'll take care of you. You'll get your pension. You get your health care. Now we're moving into an era where like, we're not exactly sure what's going to happen tomorrow. What do you think? And so there's, I call it this decision shift. So a lot of the decisions that were once made by management or your traditional employer are now being shifted off to the individual. So that's going to happen whether you're going to be traditionally employed as a W-2 or if you're going to be working for yourself as a 1099 or above, you know, some other level of entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. So again, like we were talking about the spectrum of entrepreneurship, I'm also seeing a blurring of traditional employment and self-employment. Now, I think a lot of traditionally employed folks are going to start functioning, taking on characteristics of being self-employed. Hmm. And I think there's a lot of self-employed people that is going to be a growing body of people who are like, you know what? I don't want to have employees. I just want to like create my own work, my own job. So that is a growing contingent. As before we jumped on, I think society or local governments, policymakers don't necessarily still get this idea of the individual worker who is working for themselves. In fact, there's really interesting U.S. Census Bureau that individuals, they refer to them as non-employee businesses. Mm-hmm. They only employ themselves. Those making $100,000 increased by about 5% in the last couple of years.
Wow.
Those making $1 million also increased by the same.
Wow.
So that's very fascinating. Again, this idea, like we have to start, you know, I was again taught, we were all taught that working for yourself any form of self-employment, entrepreneurship, it's risky, it's scary, don't do it. You're going to work yourself all the time. Your whole life is going to be your job. It doesn't have to be that way. And in fact, we're seeing individuals making more money than ever. Mm-hmm. And I think that is an opportunity that we need to start taking a closer look at.
Yeah. So what does taking a closer look at that look like for you? And, you know, kind of in line with that, what's the key difference between 100,000 and a million?
Technology, automation. It's your friend. It is not the enemy. That's the other message. As somebody who's self-employed, I usually don't like to talk about numbers because I don't want to be one of those tech pros who's like, I made this much money in this amount of time. But just for a little math example, just my own reality.
Yeah.
My last business, I sold the online portion of it in 2012. So I was generating annual revenues of about $600,000 a year off of only 50 potential clients.
Wow.
And I was working an average of 20 hours a week. The way I was able to do that is through virtual teams and automation and really setting up great systems. And I think if you've read Thank You for Being Late by Thomas Friedman, one of the key messages in that book is that the individual, if they want to, can have access to a greater amount of power than ever before in human history. And so that's my version of seeing that in a business, where maybe 30 years ago, I would have to be running a brick and mortar business to be able to work for myself. But now I can be working online through using automation, that I can be making significantly more for every hour that I'm working. And I see this show up in a lot of the folks. I mean, I've interviewed over 500 entrepreneurs who've moved from employment to self-employment. And it takes about 2 years to get, on average, to get back to your income level from your last job. But year three and four, it is not uncommon where people are doubling and tripling what they made. And that's when their system kicks in. That's when the automation kicks in. And I always remind people of that. Yeah, there's a learning curve to working for yourself, right? It's a struggle. I mean, you haven't done it before. Your brain's like, is this really going to work or not? But if you can stick through it and push through and get to that year, that third year, you have created your system that is going to be yours, that works for you, is in alignment for you, message of your podcast, making your work work for you. And it's there forever. And you're going to be more adaptable to any of the changes going on in the economy, as opposed to every time you get a job, you have to learn somebody else's system.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting from scratch over and over and over again. And that's really draining and exhausting. And it's certainly not on your terms.
Yeah. Well, as you're talking too, I'm thinking about Chris Ducker and Youpreneur, and really about
great guy
creating systems centered around yourself and how you work, as opposed to, you know, a company centric view.
For example, I just had a friend visiting me who is a classic night owl. And I was driving him to the airport this morning, and I'm like, it's amazing. Like, the whole traditional 9-to-5 system kind of really screwed you over. You know, there's about 15% of the population that thrives after 7 o'clock at night. And I'm a huge believer. I call it, you know, if you have to all of a sudden design your workday, where do you start? And I encourage people to start with their energy. When do you feel you have your most energy, your sharpest mental focus? And I call this your peak performance period. And generally, it's about a 4-hour window in the day. And I've, you know, I was a history major, reading, you know, about artists and scientists and philosophers throughout the ages. This keeps showing up. And it also shows up in my interviews, and it showed up in my own personal life. Like, I work best between 7 a.m. and 11 a.m. Not saying that I don't do stuff the rest of the day, but I build my day around that. So I do my most important work during that particular time. Mm. So a night owl would do their most important work during that particular window for them. When's your peak performance period, Chris?
I like early morning and late at night.
So you're split. And I see that too. That's less common. Usually you're like morning. There's like a generally it's not a late afternoon kind of thing, because if you read Daniel Pink's book, When, we all kind of generally go through a dip after lunch, and it kind of picks up again about 5 o'clock in the afternoon for most people. Because if we're going to have to manage ourselves, it's about really aligning yourselves first with that. And that's the building block. But then there's just other things, like, if you didn't guess by now, I'm kind of extroverted. I love people. So I get motivated by that. Like, if I have to get something done that I'm not so psyched about, but I know I have to get it done, it's meaningful to my business, I try to find a way to obligate myself to somebody, because then I will totally get it done, because I do not like disappointing people. Yeah. I'm not like a total 100% people pleaser, but I've kind of learned how to hack myself. So that's an example of how to start using yourself, my natural rhythms. You know, I like it makes my skin crawl when there's all those productivity folks out there who are trying to advocate like, it works for me, it'll work for you too. And it's like, no, I'm going to like give you all permission right now. You can read all that productivity stuff, but don't think it's necessarily going to work for you. Set up an experiment, try it out. I definitely encourage you to do that, but make that decision for yourself. Does this feel good to you? Mm-hmm. Does this feel right? Or do you need to make an adjustment, or do you need to try something else? Because there is, that is the myth of the 20th century. The 20th century economy wanted one size fits all productivity to make those factories work. We are now moving into an era where everything is going to be infinite and chaotic and constantly changing. So you are the only constant in this time of uncertainty. So you really have to understand how you work. And Chris, the most important subject in life, never taught to any one of us, is how to learn about ourselves.
Yes. Self-awareness is one of those discussions and conversations with people that can sometimes make them feel a little bit uncomfortable, especially if you know, you're very self-aware and they're not.
So the name of my company is called Life Skills That Matter. And yes, I teach people about business by first teaching them life skills. And a lot of, and even I was like, oh my gosh, I'm a sales trainer. I went to business school. Am I crazy? And I did my first accelerator this past spring. And by the end of it, they said, yeah, absolutely. Totally get why you need to learn these life skills. Those are the foundation. That is what will give you career resilience and value and motivation for the long term. Life skills, or some people call them soft skills, they are more durable than hard skills, because hard skills are going to constantly be changing. So you have to learn how you learn. You have to learn how you learn with others, or who gets that best knowledge out of you. You have to learn how, when you create something, what other people think of it. That's why those life skills are so crucial now. And it's, I think we've avoided them, especially in that 20th century economy, because they're not necessarily measurable, but they are crucial into the world that we're heading in. So I love that you picked up on self-awareness, most important life skill. And we need to learn it. I mean, teach people as young as possible, because that is how you learn about yourself. And that's how you learn hard skills.
Yeah. Interesting, because I had a moment today where my self-awareness really helped the situation and helped someone that I was working with understand me better. Because to me, I like seeds of ideas and run with that. Whereas sometimes people are like, maximum creativity means that you can do whatever you want, you know? And so it's like that piece of self-awareness was crucial to making that relationship better.
Absolutely. I mean, think about how much more effective or how much better our work environments could be if we could only, that's the first thing I always say, you have to negotiate with yourself first and learn about like, oh yeah, this is how I like to learn, you know, or, you know, I'm not going to write a blog post after 8 o'clock at night. It's just not going to happen. I just know that about myself. You know, that's why I'm a very good planner, because I know my peak performance period of time. And I know how brain dead I am after 8 o'clock at night. And to this point of, you know, it's not about being so inflexible of saying like, if you and I were going to do something together, I think you and I, because of our self-awareness, we could say, listen, these are just kind of three broad things of how I work. Can you tell me how you work? And let's look for alignment, or at least how can we make this work? And then we can really be enjoyed. I mean, I think there's like this whole other confidence level of coming together to be able to have that honest conversation, that it's a deeper partnership. And I think you're going to get better work out of that.
Absolutely. So as a history major, and I'm assuming someone who loves to read history, when you look at the world today in terms of work, has there ever been a pattern in history that we can look at? Or are we literally in brand new times that have never existed before?
Boy, we just dove into the deep end of the pool.
Why not? Let's do it.
Not to be coy, but it's really both. We have seen this before. I would say that's relatable in recent history. It was the Industrial Revolution, right? So that was a massive fundamental change of what people viewed as work. Prior to the Industrial Revolution, people worked for themselves when you think about it. They had a craft or a skill. They worked in their communities. Most people were farmers. They kind of, you know, their whole routine was in a natural rhythm according to the seasons, according to when the sun rose and set. And then the factories came along, and then the robber barons needed people to run those factories. And they started like saying, you can make more. And then they like reduced the wages and like kind of you're stuck there. It was just, I mean, think about it, even today, we still call the department in outside corporations, human resources. I mean, how demeaning is that? You're just another resource. It's awful. I mean, this is, again, we teach people not to think as much as themselves, because we don't want you to get too thinking too much for yourself. Now you're going to upset the order. So I think in that level, I don't have the exact date. I have it in one of my blog posts, but there was such a massive shift from like the late 1800s to the early 1920s of something like over half of the population went from what they had been doing for almost thousands of years into factory work, which I would say is very unnatural. I always say the 9-to-5 lifestyle is unnatural. That is not how human beings evolved and designed. You know, we were just laughing. We just had lunch with a friend of ours about how I live my life according to my natural rhythm. I'm very seasonal. I wake up with the sun. I kind of crash out once the sun goes down. I kind of hibernate in the winter. I'm kind of manic right now at this time of year in the spring. And that's okay, because guess what, Chris? This is the way we used to live, except I'm like this weirdo now. And I'm like, no, this is normal. This is what a human being actually feels like, because I extracted myself from the inner workings of the machine, the corporation. Now, how is it different? Well, we've always had linear, predictable growth, even though it has definitely in the last 200 years increased very quickly because of the Industrial Revolution. We are now entering a time where we're going to have exponential growth, which even for me, it's hard to wrap my brain around this idea that growth is just going to keep getting faster and faster and faster. It's almost, I think somebody says there's the singularity, kind of the moment when computers know as much or can process information. I believe this definitely can process information just as fast as the human brain. But it's going to be something like a few seconds later, it's going to be double. A few seconds after that, it's going to be quadruple. So that's how fast things will change. As another personal example, I like to try to make my technology last. I finally just got a new MacBook Pro this year. I was using a 2009 MacBook.
Nice.
I replaced the battery, replaced the RAM, made it last as long as possible. But then when I started using this new laptop, I was like, oh my God, I felt like I leapt into the future. Everything was so fast, you know, compared to the laptop that I was using. And that's what's happening. I mean, I think there's large swaths of the population who feel like they're not able to keep up anymore. And that is a huge concern. I mean, it's really starting to show up in our politics, because people are like, hold on a second. Whoa, things are just changing so fast, where on average, I think this is also in Thomas Friedman's book, Thank You for Being Late. It takes on average a human being or about a generation to adopt a new technology or incorporate it into culture, about 10 to 15 years. But now we're talking about the half-life of skills, that once a skill has been innovated, introduced into the marketplace, after about 5 years, it starts declining in value. So we are just starting to get used to something when it's already declining in value. So this is what is going to be different that we have to reckon with as humans. And kind of Thomas, and I'm kind of down with Thomas Friedman's kind of takeaway from that book is, it's kind of counterintuitive. You have to stop and reflect in order to observe the change, to like know how to direct yourself and deal with it.
How do you find the confidence to stop and reflect when society and the systems move so quickly?
I think it's really, if you're a traditional employee, it's so super hard. It's an addiction. You know how a lot of times when people, again, last night, gosh, I feel like I'm just like bringing up some of my personal life stories. That's what you're doing to me, Chris. Thank you. I think they're so relatable. Like I went to dinner with a friend and we were talking for like 2 hours. He was in his early 30s. I'm in my early 40s. He's millennial and he kind of regards himself as that. And he said, you know what I like about you? You didn't take out your phone once. you're so Gen X. And I said, no, I'm just so human. I like do not, that is not okay with me. Anybody who does do that, I tell them, I'm like, listen, like we are in person now. Like I want your full attention. I'm going to give you my full attention. If you can't do that, let's wrap this up. Because, you know, you have to be able to kind of shake people out. And even when you say it like that, people are rarely offended. They're kind of like, they're almost grateful that I was like, wow, like it's okay to say that? Like this is okay. I can put my phone off. You know, unless it's an emergency, you have a sick kid or something. I get that. But I think it is, and that's why I choose to work for myself, because I have full control over this, that I can communicate, I can dress how I want to dress, I can communicate how I want to communicate. I can say that. And people aren't offended. They're kind of like, I respect that. You know, I kind of want to be able to do that for myself. As an experiment, I recently applied for a job just to see what people go through, because I haven't done a resume or cover letter in 15 years. And the biggest thing that I took away from that experience, I did not get the job, by the way, folks, because there's no way I could ever work for somebody else again. I work with people. People work with me. That when you're going for a job, you are allowed to negotiate a salary. You're allowed to maybe even negotiate time, more time off or sabbatical, something like that. But you are really not allowed to share how you like to work. It's very rare. It's assumed that you are a resource and you are going to submit and align with the culture. You're a perfect culture fit. Because that nobody's just like this, like perfect culture fit. I'm a human being. I'm unique. There's only one Stephen Worley has ever walked the earth, and there will never be another one. There'll never be another Chris Martin. This is it. This is your shot of experiencing us and how we are.
Exactly.
I think that's why I'm trying to help. A lot of people are starting to work for themselves because of that. They're like, you know what? I can't take it anymore. I got to like pull out. It's like breaking that addiction. Like if you can't put down your phone, people are addicted to constantly work. They say, I'm so busy, I got to work. And they will put personal obligations or responsibilities or yearnings aside because they have to work. It's this quote unquote real job. And I don't know if you've ever felt this, but as somebody who works for myself, people think like, oh, well, you work from home and you have all this flexibility. Of course you can run errands for me. Of course you could do this, that, and the other thing. It's like, I made this choice. I didn't make this choice to enable you to be addicted to traditional employment. I would love to help get you out of that system. You got me fired up.
That's good. I love the passion and I love your enthusiasm because it energizes me as, you know, not only a podcaster, but just another human being.
It's possible, people. I never, ever thought I could work for myself. I think that's part of my story of like, oh my gosh, if I can do it, you can do this. And then that's what I'm really diagnosing. Like, what are those incremental steps? And it's a lot of emotional work before you get to the hard skills. That's why people think learning a business is like setting up the website, getting the logo, what kind of legal structure should I be? It is none of that. It's about getting to know yourself, experiment, be curious, start meeting people, see how they're reacting, what to do, having lots of conversations. And then if you do that right, all those other decisions for your business will take care of themselves. Hmm. Almost.
You're telling a really good story about successes, but what's something that you still struggle with today and that you're constantly trying to work through?
Self-doubt and fear never goes away, folks. Sorry to tell you. It just doesn't. And a lot of times, yeah, there's totally moments and like, am I totally crazy? Am I like the boy crying wolf over here? And I actually, what gets me through a couple of things, like your brain, I've learned your brain is hardwired to be afraid of things because it has a limited amount of energy to make sure that it can continue to survive. You know, way back when, you know, when you're going to go out to hunt something, your brain was like, this better be close to a sure thing, you know, because we only have so much energy going on here. But now in modern life, we have 3 square meals a day. Hopefully, if you're lucky enough, I know, unfortunately, there's too many people in the world who don't, and that's, we got to fix that. But if you start understanding, like a lot of times your brain's unfamiliar, if it's unfamiliar, like I'm going off in this journey, I've learned now there is no other path for me. I have a responsibility. I know too much. I've lived this too much not to share what I've learned. And that is what I think helps push me through those doubts. And another thing that I do is when people write me these really awesome, heartwarming emails, I have a label in my Gmail that says, keep going. And I label it that. So when I go through one of these doubt scenarios or this, like the fear kind of crops up, I go and read that and be like, yeah, right. This is who I'm doing it for. Fear is normal. Self-doubt is normal. But I'm now learning how to manage it better and more effectively. And sometimes it does get the better of me. I don't want it to, but I'm human. That's how I'm designed.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you know, as you're explaining your struggles, as you're telling your story, you're starting to give a glimpse into how you approach learning new things. So when people are learning soft skills, when you're learning soft skills, when you're even learning hard skills, how do you approach learning new things? What are some tools and techniques that you use?
I think that's the thing. You have to, again, very frustrating. We are taught how we're supposed to learn. We're never taught how we learn. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So right now you're listening and most of you, have you ever been asked, how do you learn? I bet most of you are like, I actually have no idea. Start being aware of that. again, self-awareness, it starts with that. Do something that you think you're curious about, you want to learn about, and just kind of naturally see what you gravitate toward. And so for me, like if there's a newer topic that I'm familiar with, I like reading books first. I like that 30,000 foot view, like get me familiar with the language, get me familiar with the constructs, the structure, the paths, the people involved. And then I like to pick off like a little experiment for myself just to tinker around. And then when I get stuck, that's when I seek out people who have done it before, who are further down the path for me. I'm like, hey, this is what I've done. Like, what advice, what perspective do you have to keep moving forward? Then they give it to me. Then I go back and tinker. And you kind of keep going back and forth in that process. Another awesome jumpstart one that I love doing, it's been the last couple of years that I've recognized this about myself, again, because I'm so social. When I want to learn about podcasting, I don't know if you've ever, back in the day, there was NMX Live. It used to be Blog World. I don't know if you ever went to that conference, Chris.
I didn't, but I'm familiar with Blog World.
So that evolved in NMX Live, and fortunately has since, you know, died. But I went in 2014 because I wanted to start a podcast. And what it does, when you go to a conference around a subject matter that you want to learn, you're instantly plugged into this tribe of people who are so excited about it. You're away from all of your other influences, anybody else who's going to tell you that you're crazy or why are you doing this. And you're soaked in these people, this confidence, this motivation, this learning environment for like 2 to 3 days. And you get to meet these people. Then you have people to call in when you go back home for that continued support. That you can ask as many questions as you want, and let's like really rapid fire, get those questions out of your head, because that's also what slows us down, particularly when you're thinking about making a big change in your life, like working for yourself. I'm like, get those questions out of your head as fast as you can, so you can, so your brain is just getting more comfortable, more familiar with it, right? So you can reduce that fear. So that's another technique that I use, like go to a conference. If there's something you want to learn, like go, there's a conference for everything nowadays.
There really is. And they're all over the world. I mean,
and there's local ones. You don't have to like spend a ton of money, like, you know, go find something.
Yeah. So what's something that you are curious about today that you're kind of starting to tinker with?
I am finally going to do something that I've been wanting to do for a long time, is I have to codify all of everything that I've learned into a book, which anybody's written a book, it's very overwhelming and very intimidating. I've written two books that people will not have read. And I hope people want to read this book, but I need to like put it down, because I know there's lots of books about entrepreneurship and the future of work and self-management. But what I really want to do is bring all those subjects together. I want to say, like, this is what's going, that's what people want to know. Like, can you just succinctly and plain English, Stephen, tell me what's going on? And then how do I respond to that? I think that's what people really want to know. They want a straight answer. And we are not, and our politicians, our corporate leaders are not giving people a straight answer. I'm not saying I have a clear, perfect answer, but it does lie in, if everything's uncertain, I think our best bet is really getting good at the three forms of work that I think we all avoid: working on ourselves, working on our relationships, and working on creating. And those are very basic and human to us, and they are not activities that are necessarily encouraged by most forms of traditional employment. And I think that's what's going to save us and protect us and make us value, make us happier, make us more satisfied. So the title of the book, it's called The Only Work Left.
Wow. That's heavy, but awesome.
But I'm very optimistic. As you didn't get the vibe from me, folks, I'm a pragmatist, but with a lot of optimism in there, because I, you know, we just got to talk about this, Chris. We just all need to be having conversations every day about, like, what are we going to do? Like, if I want everybody listening to us right now, if you lost your job tomorrow, seriously, what is the plan? Because the plan is like, oh, I'll just get another job. Well, I'm sorry to tell you, in the next decade, definitely the next 20 years, that's not going to be the easy option that you have learned to be taught that it once was. Just because the work as you know it has not always been this way, as we described how the Industrial Revolution totally changed what work was all about, it will not always be this way. You got to really start understanding that.
So you've mentioned a lot of books and resources throughout this episode, whether it's Thank You for Being Late, Thomas Friedman, or Win by Daniel Pink. But is there a book or resource that has really impacted you?
Yeah, I want to share one that I've not shared before in a podcast interview, kind of in the nature of the show, kind of creativity, fostering creativity. Because there's a lot of people who think like, I'm not creative, I'm not curious. Yes, you are. You're a human. Like, that's just part and parcel of being a human. Like, anytime you have a question in your head, that's being curious. Except we just don't know how to, we don't have the language to look at it. of what it means. Like, I'm creative. Like, how is that happening? And I love The Creative Habit by Twyla Tharp, because I think she's a choreographer, a professional dancer, New York City. And she just has this very nice plain English. It's almost like a little bit of like how she kind of looked back at her career to understand how she would explain how she's been creative all along and the different situations and the different steps. So I love that. If you're a person who's like questioning whether you're creative or curious or not, definitely read that book. It really is going to help you to be like, oh gosh, I am creative, and in learning how to foster and develop that, because that is, again, that part, one of the forms of work that we avoid is creating, because back to the traditional employment system, everything has to be perfect because corporate wants everything perfect, but that is an illusion. Nothing is perfect. Everything's a work in progress. And I think Twyla Tharp's book really gives you permission to do that.
Nice. It's interesting too, because we also live in a society where there's so much content to consume that if we just passively consume, we'll never actively create.
Yeah, a lot of times people, I'm going to have a little admission. I don't have as much time to listen to podcasts as I would like. Or a lot of times people are like, what are all the blogs that you're reading? And I kind of go through spurts on that because I need time to create. I can't just constantly be consuming. And actually, as another challenge I always give people is understanding your create to consume ratio. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you're watching like 3 hours of television every single day, like, why not carve out one of those hours to create something? You know, You always say like, I don't have enough time to do X, Y, and Z. Yes, you do. If you consume less in terms of information, other people's experiences, you can start creating your own.
Awesome. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Your enthusiasm and passion for life it's infectious. I just thank you just for how you show up and bring yourself to the world.
Well, I thank you for extracting it from me. I mean, I'm leaving this interview so energized right now. So thank you for lighting the spark. Appreciate it.
All right, that does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It means so much to me that you're here. And thank you for Stephen for just sharing his passion and his mission of the future of work. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and people who might need to hear Stephen's message? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe need some advice or just want someone to say hi to? Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm chris@chrismartinstudios.com, or you can find me lurking on Twitter. I'm @CMStudios. I just want to end with this great quote from Stephen that just really hit me hard. Life skills are the foundation. That is what will give you career resilience, value, and motivation for the long term. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.